We are live, we're local, and it's time for a Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, February 29th. I'm your host, Julie Copins, in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown. On today's program, Enrique Bravo and Evan Carson from Perseverance Theater will offer a preview of Spring Break on Stage. Jim Powell and some of his cold weather sports enthusiasts will be here with details about the Arctic Winter Games. We'll learn about The Jetty with Dana Herndon, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Bird Note, Music, and more today on a Juno Afternoon. It'll be mostly clear this evening with a low around 33, continued high winds with gusts as fast as 60 miles an hour. Hang on.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Coquille Tribe is announcing a $20,000 grant that'll help increase and diversify food programs. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
A number of grocery stores currently donate to what's called Fresh Alliance. The program collects expired baked goods, fruits, and vegetables, and other items to redistribute to food banks. With its latest grant, McKay's will join the list, which also includes Safeway and Walmart. Jackie Chambers coordinates the Coquille Tribal Fund. She says while the food is past its sell-by date, it's still safe and healthy for families who'd otherwise go without it.
Something that's very important to the tribe is potlatch, and that's always giving back and leaving some for others. So this grant is going to help to eliminate throwing out food waste.
Chambers says altogether, 58 groups are sharing nearly $300,000 in grants this year. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A new institute was launched in New Mexico this week to help empower Native communities. Cheryl Fairbanks is the Native American Budget and Policy Institute's interim director. She says the institute will work with community members, university scholars and students, tribal leaders, and others.
This institute is going to be solution-oriented. Rather than the Indian problem, it's going to be the Indian solution. We have a governing council of very esteemed individuals who have expertise in law, medicine, environment, as well as their own indigenous knowledge.
One of the first activities is a series of meetings to focus on incorporating culture, tradition, and healing into justice systems. Indigenous people, scientists, and legal experts recently gathered at the University of New Mexico to discuss climate change, environmental protection, and development in the Arctic. Ken Tape, research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, spoke about changes scientists have seen in Alaska.
From glaciers, sea ice, changes in vegetation, thawing of the frozen ground that we call permafrost, and also changes in wildlife. A lot of things that you would expect if you get 100 years worth of warming. What happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. You know, this is a global climate that we are dealing with, and so when you see this ice albedo feedback, for example, so you see increased warming in the polar regions, that is tied to climate down here. So, yeah, it gets warmer in Alaska, and it's getting drier and warmer in the Southwest, and so those things are linked.
Gwich'in people talked about work to protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from development under Trump administration plans. Much of the work includes educating the public about the area and the caribou Gwich'in people rely on, says Bernadette Dementif with the Gwich'in Steering Committee.
We're going to be doing more outreach locally and nationally. We will be also be going to the United Nations Forum, just basically going after probably more corporation, because this is the last untouched, unspoiled ecosystem in the world. And, you know, it's just not just for us. What happens in the Arctic is going to happen down this way. You know, we have to be concerned. It's time, right now is the time for us to take a stand. That's when it's too late.
Dementif says the Gwich'in Nation is not giving up or backing down in efforts to protect the wildlife refuge from oil and gas drilling. Well-known Native American author Sherman Alexie released a statement Wednesday as pressure mounted from accusations of sexual harassment. The accusations from one named woman and several anonymous sources surfaced on social media in recent days. The award-winning writer of books, including The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, apologized for hurting people, saying there are women telling the truth about his behavior, but Alexie did not expand on any details. He also rejected accusations by the woman named who he says were consenting sexual partners. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on KTOO. I'm your host, Julie Copins, and I've just been joined in the studio by a couple of theater gods, I think I can fairly say. Welcome to Enrique Bravo and Evan Carson from Perseverance Theater. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hello. Right. Yeah, thank you.
And they are both part of the cast of Cyrano de Bergerac, which is the big next production coming up, and we'll talk about that. But for a first concern for us today is a cool program for kids. This is Spring Break on Stage. So, Enrique, tell me when and who and what it is.
Yeah, great. So it's March 19th through the 23rd, and it's happening there at Perseverance Theater. There's three separate programs. There's a creative dramatics program that's taught by Sarah Wright. That's sort of, you know, basic introduction to theater, a lot of theater games. It's for the younger kids, about 6 to 10. And then there's a improv class, which is going to be taught by Evan Carson.
Hello.
So, and Hi. We're lucky to have him from Anchorage. He's actually taught improv before. I could let Evan talk a little bit.
Okay, well, hold that thought. So then, what's the third thing?
Well, the third one
we'll get
Jay,
to Evan.
It's taught by J. Todd Adams, and he's in our cast at Cyrano, and he's going to be teaching the sort of older group, and they do a production at the end of the week. He's sort of figuring out it's going to be Shakespeare based. He's got a lot of Shakespeare background. Mm. I think he said he did Midsummer like 7 times himself. So he's really great. We call him the human crash box.
Very high energy guy.
Yeah, I really recommend his class a lot.
And what ages is that for?
And that's 10 to 18.
Okay, so for older kids and teenagers.
A little bit older kids, and it's a little longer of a class too. That's 12 to 5.
Okay, and this is during the week of spring break. Kids are off school. They need something to do, right? Let's keep them off the streets. So the class are in the mornings or afternoons? Or
right, the younger kids, so the improv and the creative dramatic sets in the morning from 9:30 to 11:30, and the older kids are from noon to 5, and all at Perseverance.
Right.
And it's two separate spaces, but mainly the Phoenix is what we're using, which is a smaller little black box there.
Okay, and then on the last day they get to perform for family and friends?
Yeah, there's a performance for family and friends, which is great. I'm really excited about that, so they can see their work, what they've been working on all week, you know?
Right.
So, and that's going to be sort of, that's the one that's Shakespeare-based is the performance. So, yeah, it's a good thing, a good program for the kids to sort of come out to. And I'm really excited. I just took over as the director of education. Mm-hmm. It's the first program that I'm sort of getting out there, but I'm really lucky that I work with some great people that already have, you know, multiple talents. So these guys have all taught before. They're really good.
Yeah. So, Evan, so you came to Juno from Anchorage. That's right. You've been involved in shows there.
Yeah. Well, I was gone for 4 years. I was in theater school down in Arizona, and I had just returned. I'll be hitting the 1 year being back home in Alaska in May. But so this is my first time actually being down in Juno, and I'm just having a blast here. We're doing Cyrano de Bergerac, and just as Enrique was touching on, the cast is immensely talented, and it's just a beautiful place to be making theater. And he reached out to me about the possibility of getting to teach at this Spring Break on Stage, and I thought it would be just an absolute blast. I've gone to teach improv up in Anchorage. I've gone to do a lot of workshops in Arizona, all along the West Coast. I've gone to do some different workshops at the Edinburgh Fringe and in Scotland and through the UK, which is really helped me a lot, not only as an actor, but also as a person. I've never been really a part of an improv troupe or been a big improv performance guy, but what improv can do for you as an actor, as a person, just personally or professionally, just kind of having that quote-unquote yes-and knowledge and being able to think on your feet, especially with other people around you or people watching you like a paying audience in a creative fashion, it's just a good thing to have for students. I believe it's ages 9 through 14.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, so that'll be from, I think, 9:30 to 11:30. It's going to be one of those morning classes.
Improv in the morning.
Right.
Okay.
Group.
Well, let's talk about that age group, because I'm imagining if you get a bunch of people in their, you know, older adults and throw them, say, okay, I'm going to put you on stage without a script and we're going to improv. I mean, we would all just be scared to death. What about this age group? What are they able to achieve in an improv kind of
structure.
They're able to achieve a bunch. You know, you see a lot of like improv shows of whether it's like Whose Line Is It Anyway on TV or a lot of these classic different ideas of what we have as improv in our heads. And you think about kids and younger people doing it, they're amazing. Whether it's younger people in the audience, they're the most honest audiences.
They're yelling stuff out.
If they're engaged, if they're on the edge of their seat, if they think it's hilarious, they're gonna let you know. And what's exciting about getting to teach improv for kids at a younger age, whether it's adolescents or 9 through 14, is, I mean, they're usually, as long as they have that trust and that ensemble that we focus on building through teaching improv, whether it's for the first time or whether it's advanced to build that ensemble, they have a trust amongst them and amongst their peers that's on stage with them, and they, once they reach that point where they're unable to let, or once they're able to let things go and to be listening and to be engaged, and just kind of let their inhibitions go, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, which are those, the building blocks you need as an actor, I think that really helps sort of strengthen that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, and I would say in life, too, like you talked about the listening and the concept of yes and. Mm-hmm. And I think, and if anyone who's ever had kids, especially if you've ever had a two-year-old, you know that when you're in a conversation with a young child, their first impulse is to go against whatever you put out there on the table.
No.
Like, no. Because once they learn that they can be independent and do that, like, that is very powerful. So breaking out of that habit of fighting against what's coming at you from the other person, but rather going with it and, in fact, taking it up to the next level. I see my kid doing that with me when I think we're about to have an argument and we end up having this great interplay. And I think I credit the improv classes for a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can carry it on. Yeah,
you're doing God's work.
trying to.
Okay. And then I imagine for you, both of you, if you want to talk about kind of like if teaching these classes, because, it takes a lot of energy. You guys are already rehearsing a show. It's a lot to add on. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask kind of why do it, and I wonder if you could talk about kind of getting back in touch with, like, when you were that age and wanting to do theater in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's sometimes the thing that, as older actors, you're trying to get back to. Mm. When I was teaching at the university, that was one of the things that I would tell my students. It's just a lot. Yes, there's technique, there's, and that, all that's important, but half of the time, you just want to go back to that kid that, thought that broom is a horse, or,
right,
that you're walking on lava. If you can sort of go back to that place in your imagination where everything, this world that you're creating, really exists inside of you. I mean, that's such a great feeling. It really kind of makes it real for yourself and I think for people watching. I love that feeling. That's the thing that it's kind of the drug that I'm always chasing when I'm when I'm acting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, it's a joy to begin to do that. Of whether you're teaching for people that are going to be on stage, you're on stage yourself, that feeling of just the energy and the feeling of it being alive and living and breathing, whether it's theater, of course, live performance being right in front of you, different than film, but especially improv when there's no script or any of these classes, it's just a blast to begin to do that. And I remember falling in love with it when I was a kid, and especially as a teenager was when I really started devoting myself to theater. It's just a blast to get to do that just all across Alaska. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so you as artists kind of get a recharge or kind of spark things back again. What about for perseverance? Why do they put time and energy into programs like this?
Because I think it's important to sort of have that base of where you're getting these, great performers. I mean, your Seth is a great example, a really good actor. I was with him in To Kill a Mockingbird, and to have those people that are starting to become the next generation of actors is great, to have that deep pool that we can, then transfer these young adults into, the plays that we're doing, and think about them when we're even thinking of shows. I think that's what keeps this sort of artistic community so rich, is that it starts so young,
Right, and we need that homegrown talent.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Hard to get actors here. Even bringing someone from Anchorage, takes budget.
If you're going to say you're a theater by and for Alaskans, you have to have that you have to cultivate that talent.
Right, and maybe their parents come in who wouldn't normally come to see a Perseverance show, but they'll come to see their kid in something and then think, oh, wow.
Right.
Cyrano's going on too. So tell us about this show. So we probably, a lot of us read this book back in high school in French class. Or what's the show like?
It's a brand new adaptation, which is great, and it's I'm really excited because this is actually the first time I'm going to be directed by Eleanor Holdridge, because she's been here before. She did What You Do About Nothing and The Crucible, which was about 10 years ago. So this is her first time back since. And she's just great. I mean, she's brought in some great people, too. We just had a the fight choreographer. He's an adjunct at Yale, Rick Sordelet, and we just had a blast. I mean, it was more than just fight choreography. He was a great acting coach, too. He sort of made sense out of these fights instead of it just, you know, when you go to a show and you're just seeing people fight, but no, why are you doing it, right? So it's, but yeah, it's, I mean, a classic sort of story of, you know, Cyrano.
He's the guy with the big nose, right?
Guy with the big nose, yeah. Who
no other way
socially
to put it.
Sort of is socially challenged because of that nose and is in love with Roxanne, so has to sort of show that love through Christian, who's, you know, one of his kind of, lack of a better word, one of his sort of cadets.
Played by our own Enrique Bravo in the studio right now.
Right. Oh, you're the dumb cute guy?
Yeah.
Great.
But no, and the people they brought in for that, John Keebler and Katie, they're great. They're really, I mean, that's also what I love about Perseverance. It brings in this talent that's so, it's easy to become insular in a place like this, but then you get to work with these other people that come in and add such a new energy, and it's been a great process. I'm really excited about this show. I think we got a good one.
And remind me when that goes up.
That opens, I have the dates here, the 16th.
16th
and goes through all the way through April 14th.
So if I've got kids, I can take them to see Cyrano. Yes, they're going to be totally inspired.
Oh, yeah. Friendly.
And then they're going to want to do
it.
One of the performance camps and improv or something.
Yeah. Really good.
What else is going on this spring that might be cool for families?
Julie, I think you can speak to Young Company.
Young Company?
Yeah. What's this?
I think
it's our very own Julie Colbins will be directing a direction play, which she just sort of got the rights to, by of Norse mythology by Neil Gaiman, which is really exciting. This literally just happened this morning, so
I just heard about this about maybe 8 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And that's
pretty
exciting.
It is
not impressive.
What kid does not want to be, you know, Thor, right?
Or a giant.
Or a giant.
Or the Midgard serpent. It's just, yeah, gods and monsters.
The loose dates right now for that are rehearsals would start the 10th and performances the 18th through the 21st of May. But that's really not that far away. It's around the corner, so really. And that age group, what would you say?
Yeah,
around
I'm saying 8 to 15 ages.
So sort of
and it is a limited cast size, too. So, and for the camps, too, it is kind of limited enrollment. So if people are interested, how do they get more info and sign up?
Yes. To sign up for Spring Break Camp, www.ptalaska.org/springbreak. Or you can just go to our education page, and there's a link right there. You can also contact me directly at enrique@ptalaska.org. My extension there is 239. So those are great ways. I mean, we have links and stuff. If anybody just needs more information, I have a welcome packet that I've already made up that I can send you some stuff.
Great.
But it's really, really good people working. I don't think I talked about Sarah Wright. She's the one dealing with the younger kids, and she's worked at Missoula.
In Missoula,
Missoula's Children's Theater. So she's got a lot of experience. All these teachers are really highly talented and
good
with
kids.
They have a lot of good
Sarah's
kids.
Sarah's just got a great big heart.
She's great.
Yeah, Sarah's fantastic.
So I'm really excited about this stuff we've got coming up. Yeah, especially with this, the Young Company show, really, Julie. She did a lot of groundwork for that, guys. So
I did. It's going to be epic.
Yeah.
Well, a good time to be a 12-year-old at Perseverance Theater.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We can
all
be 12 again. All right, we'll let you guys go. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Bird Note. Like a jazz player beating out a drum roll, a woodpecker uses its bill to rap out a brisk series of notes. Early spring resounds with the percussive hammering of woodpeckers. Their rhythmic drumming works like many birds' songs. It broadcasts to other woodpeckers over a long distance a clear assertion of territorial and mating rights. We also hear woodpeckers knocking on wood when they're carving holes in trees to create nest cavities or extract insect prey. But these whacks are more methodical. Woodpeckers offer a fascinating cast of drummers. A hefty pileated woodpecker lets go a resounding tattoo against a hollow trunk. A yellow-bellied sapsucker seems to be signaling in Morse code as it snaps its bill against a stub of dead branch. And the little downy woodpecker's drum roll seems rather modest, rather short, and not too fast. For any woodpecker, It's all about proclaiming a sound signal as far and as loud as possible. And as it searches for the most resonant drum, it might just find that your metal rain gutter makes the best music. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping you and your child save for college every step of the way, from diapers to diploma. More information at uacollegesavings.com.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now by Jim Powell. He's here to talk about the Arctic Winter Games. And, Jim, you have brought some sporty people with you. I'll maybe let those folks introduce themselves. We'll start with Mary.
I'm Mary Ellison, and I've actually been a competitor in the Arctic Winter Games as well as a coach. For over 20 years, I've been involved in this pretty special opportunity. And with me, I have two athletes, one who has participated in the Games and one who is going to be participating and representing Alaska and Juneau specifically this year. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Arnie Ellison Carnes, and I participated in the Arctic Winter Games when I was in Fairbanks a few years ago.
Okay, and how old are you, Arnie?
I'm 17.
17. You're still in high school here in Juneau.
Yeah, I'm a junior.
Okay, welcome, Arnie. And who's your buddy there?
I'm Finn Morley, and I am going to the Arctic Winter Games for snowshoeing this year.
Excellent. Okay. And how far along are you in school?
I'm a freshman.
You're a freshman. Okay, yeah. So this will be your first time going to the Winter Games?
Yes.
Okay, and this year it's every other year, is that right?
Right, every 2 years.
And this year it's in, you said, Northwest Territories location.
Northwest Territories. Two communities are sharing them, which isn't unusual because the communities in the north are very small.
Sure.
And the games actually attract more than 2,000 people.
Wow.
It's almost like they were saying the other day for the Winter Olympics, there were like 5,000. I was thinking, well, we're 2,000. You know, we're getting up there. Anyway, it's 2,000 people, and it's a place, two communities, Hay River and Fort Nelson, which is in Northwest Territories.
Okay, so athletes from all over the north are going to converge on these two little towns. And we've just seen the Winter Olympics on TV and all that. It's so exciting. Well, how is this different? Maybe, Mary, if you want to talk about that.
Actually, it's different and it's the same. And it's really exciting because there's these opening ceremonies. And I think about how excited I am for Finn and the other athletes who will be participating. They're really special and really bring together. The games celebrate competition and culture. So they're a combination of cultural performances. It was the first time I'd ever seen throat chanting from Greenland, as well as dancers from Sami, northern Norway, Sweden, and Finland. And then they bring together either between 17 and 21 sports. So there's a variety of them. So every sport, if you go to the Arctic Winter Games website, which you can do, has competitions every other day or every day, depending on what it is. At the conclusion of the event, they have a medal ceremony.
Oh.
And the medals are ulus, and they're around your neck. Okay. I have a couple at home, actually. And so you get on the podium, and the national anthem is played, and it's really special. And I was telling Jim today, I coach a number of different things and I'm involved in different activities in Juneau. But what makes these so special is, like, Finn's going to get to the starting line as a snowshoer, and there's going to be so many different languages. So many different languages. And it's a celebration of being from the north and just those things that we participate in because we're from the north. It's really unique and just really brings together a diverse group of people that doesn't happen in any other place I've seen.
So, Finn, how are you preparing for the snowshoe race? How are you training?
Well, I'm doing a lot of snowshoeing. We did a time trial yesterday, which was pretty fun, and just doing some running and, yeah.
Can I just jump in? Finn, why don't you tell us what you have to train on and what you race on? You're the only place in the world this happens as a snowshoer in the Arctic Winter Games.
What we use is we use traditional wooden snowshoes and mukluks. And we have to tie our mukluks on with lamp wicking. So it's very, it's like a, I don't know.
This is like kicking it old school.
Yeah.
It is, and it's the only traditional sport. And Juneau has the most active representation of snowshoers anytime in the games. And Finn took it not further this year. Finn and his grandmother, and then Chris Thomas and Jan McFeeters, they've made their own mukluks.
Oh, my gosh.
Tanned moose hide for Ronan Davies snowshoes. And so I'm really excited because they got to participate in that traditional process.
Yeah, it was really fun making mukluks, and it's cool to be to make what you're gonna wear
right.
during the games.
Kind of like time travel. You're going back in history, and you're in touch with all those people who did that back then.
Yeah,
what a great experience. So, Arnie, what is your event?
I did snowshoeing as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I raced with a lot of people that were a lot bigger than me.
Is it like boxing people out? It's a tight little trail and you're running into trees? Or is it kind of help me visualize the course?
Well, I guess I was pretty young for the juveniles, and so I was looking up side to side with racers, so it's kind of intimidating.
But you held on. You held your own.
Yeah.
You got around.
It was a good experience.
Awesome. Okay. Great. And what are some of the other sports that are represented?
There's about 19 sports, but from Juneau or Southeast, we have quite a few represented. We have snowshoe, figure skating, ice hockey, futsal, volleyball. This is one I like to watch, is table tennis.
Oh.
And actually,
now, hold on. Is that an Arctic winter game?
Well, in the Arctic, what we do is we're inside a lot of times.
Sure.
So a lot of the traditional Arctic games are done inside. So we have a lot of those. Anyway, there's 23 people going from this part of the state. And we've always had really good representation from Southeast, which why I came today is actually to pitch the fundraiser.
So getting all those people to Northwest Territories is not going to be cheap. So
exactly.
Yeah. So what do you have planned to try to raise some funds?
Yeah, we have almost 300 people that are going this year, and it's a task. And we had state support until 2 years ago. Basically, they paid the bill.
Mm.
We got a state grant and didn't have to do much fundraising, but 2 years ago, we really had to pitch in. I'm on the board of directors that really organizes the games and gets the kids to the games.
Yeah.
And so we had to, it's heavy lifting, really, because we had to raise almost $800,000 in 2 years. And so that really was a quite a task. But we, Alaska Airlines stepped up, and they pitched in a lot, and other corporate folks have pitched in. But we've tried to go more local.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we did here. We had a fundraiser at Malaga Distillery a couple months ago, and that was successful. And so this will be our last fundraiser before the games.
Okay.
The games are in a couple weeks. And so on Sunday at 9 o'clock down at El Sombrero, we're having a flapjack fundraiser at 9 o'clock in the morning. So please come down. It's $10. And thanks to El Sombrero, they're pitching in a big way.
Great.
And other businesses are pitching in, too. So please come down and join us and pitch in so we can continue to send a lot of athletes to these games. It's really hard to explain the experience. It really is. But it's a wonderful experience. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for kids. It really is something special.
Like. Well, what I like, you know, we send our kids to Close Up. They go down to D.C. Maybe our kids go down to, you know, New York City or something like that. Like, we're sending them north in the other direction because this is our culture, and that's
right.
So important to be in touch with that. I love it.
Yeah.
And our young people have a really lot of opportunities to participate in sports. And I was telling Jim and these team members, I remember a few years ago we were in Yellowknife and it was 36 below Celsius and Fahrenheit. So they were pretty merging that temperature. And we had a coaches meeting, should we race? And, you know, we look at each other and a lot of these athletes, this is what they train for every 2 years. We just have a lot more opportunity for competition. And so we decided, you know, unanimously, yes, we're going to race.
Oh
yes, everyone's going to cover every ounce of their flesh. But it's really important for us to just, in the spirit of the games, get everybody together and celebrate that. Yeah.
Right. Well, I hope you have better conditions this time. What were you going to say, Jim?
Well, the other thing that's unique about the Arctic Winter Games is it's the only sport, it's the only event that's held that pulls from all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 50 communities that we had at the last games. The last games were in Greenland, and it was 50 communities from all over. I mean, small communities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a goal of ours, is to have more participation from all over.
Right.
And it's really unique in that way.
Okay. Let me go back to the guys, to Arnie or Finn. If you wanted to talk about, like, when you are into a winter sport like snowshoeing or Nordic skiing,
here in Juneau, is that like a cool thing? Are your friends like, what are you doing out there when it's 10 below? What kind of a reaction do you get from your peers?
I think people think it's weird, but I don't really care. It's Nordic skiing and snowshoeing and all the winter sports. They're really fun, and it's good to be active and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, Arnie?
Yeah. I mean, and generally, a lot of our friends are doing the same thing. So, like, while these guys are training for the games, there's a lot of people that just come and, like, run with them or snowshoe with them, no matter if they're going or not, just to get outside and support them there.
What great solidarity. I love to hear that. That's
and
wonderful.
Then it takes a village, and which is why we're really grateful to El Sombrero for hosting this fundraiser.
Yeah, who's
going to
be
Saturday?
Making all those flapjacks?
I don't know.
Volunteers.
Volunteers and some other people. That's fantastic. So that's this Sunday morning starting at 9 o'clock at El Sombrero, $10. All the flapjacks you can eat? I guess, or they're going to cut it off. But okay,
flapjacks.
So you could kick in another $10 if you're really hungry. But all the funds go to support our Alaskan Arctic Winter Olympians. Well, I shouldn't say Olympians. What do we call them?
Athletes.
Athlete winter gamers.
Yeah.
Great.
Winter
gamers. Yeah. Well, thank you. I'll let you guys get back to your training rounds. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
us.
Have fun.
Join the Jack and KTOO for March's art classes with the very talented Sarah Ritter of Bronze Betty Finery. Sarah will work with participants in creating their own pair of custom earrings on March 8th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Louise Douglas Inn. All supplies are included, no host bar. Tickets available now at KTOO, the Jack, and JAHC.org.
I have three kids, by the way. I have a 17-year-old, I have a 14-year-old, I have a 10-year-old. Well, I hesitate because it changes the ages, you know. Can't just save them like that. I wish you could, quite honestly. I just showed them the other night the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I said, Mommy seems good, doesn't she? Because I think against that backdrop, I really shine.
In case you hadn't heard, KTOO is presenting Paula Poundstone this March 8th at 7th at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 5 and SALT will offer refreshments until showtime. We highly encourage you to pick up your will call tickets in advance at KTOO next Monday through Wednesday during regular business hours. The night of the event, we'll be auctioning off a handcrafted stool by Dean Graber of Rainforest Customs. Paula will use it during the show, and she'll sign it afterwards for the highest bidder. More information at ktoo.org. See you March 8th.
And at 33 minutes past the hour, this is a Juno afternoon. I'm Julie Copins here on KTOO with our producer, Jeff Brown, joined in the studio now by Dana Herndon. She's here to tell us, with a couple of special guests, tell us about a new development out in the Yawk Bay area, the Jetty. Welcome to the program, Dana.
Thanks so much. And here, this is about the guys and their project. So I want you guys to introduce yourselves. They're from Alaska Legacy Partners.
Sounds good. This is Garrett Schoenberger. I'm one of the managing partners for Alaska Legacy Partners.
Welcome, Garrett.
Thank you.
And I'm Paul Simpson, the other managing partner for Alaska Legacy Partners.
Okay. And so this is a private investment, real estate development kind of deal, or is this a cooperation with some public entity? Help me out.
Yeah, Alaska Legacy Partners is a newly formed entity between Paul and myself, and we're both Juneau born and raised and recently moved back to start this company. And our first project is the Jetty.
Tell me where and what's going on out there.
The Jetty is the former UAS bookstore building, or before that, the Horton's Hardware.
Right.
Built in 1967, so the building's got some history, next to Squire's. And it was formerly occupied by the university, and we purchased the building late last year, and it sits on a big piece of land. It's a 2.43-acre site. But the idea is to reposition the building and turn it into a retail flex destination building for not just Off Bay, but all of Juneau. And the vision behind it is to procure tenants like a brew pub, a cafe, mm-hmm. coffee shop, boutique marketplace, floral shop, yoga studio, and deliver a more progressive, forward-thinking space where we have some cool features such as our goal is to create a front-covered patio area that have really nice views. We'll have really nice views of
Stafford Harbor. Yeah, the harbor's right there. Yeah. I think it's great to take advantage of that.
There's a lot going on. I mean, we have the university close by. There's already mm-hmm. Squires. There's a few restaurants, the harbor. So there's already a lot going on. So this redevelopment is actually really exciting because it could just really just make this district, you know, take it to where it needs to be, something really vibrant and happening.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Excellent. Okay, so you're having a launch party? Tell me
yes.
about that.
Yes, it's on Saturday. We're super mm-hmm. excited. So the launch is on Saturday. It's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And to really put make this vision come alive, you know, to make it like a maker's market or a hub for that, we're doing a unique artisan pop-up market. So we'll have 10 or more vendors, people that you guys know, like Panhandle Produce, Barnacle, Mac Provisions, Michaela Goad, Aleph Design, who's like this new woodwork, and custom pieces. So it's going to be really cool. All of them are coming together for this launch party, but we also have other things going on. Right, guys?
We do. And on that note, Dana, on the vendor note, there's a real special announcement mm-hmm. with Devil's Club Brewing is going to be, which is a long time in the making, another local group of young entrepreneurs that have really hustled to put this company together over the last 4 years. And they will be debuting their beer at the Jetty on Saturday night. And so we're really excited and fortunate to have that group debuting at the Jetty.
I drive up for Dog Bay for that. That's
yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah, we're going to have some music by DJ Manu. We have a bar by Salt, all these vendors, and a lot of people are interested in coming to this event. So it'll be really exciting to see what happens.
Right. Let me ask you guys, so you talked about some of the up-and-coming creative entrepreneurs that are really making some cool things happen downtown. And I know some of them, like Imago Distilleries, run into some roadblocks with some procedural issues and some regulatory issues. Why is it, are there things about Juneau that make it particularly maybe difficult for developments like this to happen? Is there red tape, and how do you get over that, and how do you make stuff happen here in town?
Paul and I are pretty fresh and new back to Juneau, and I think we're looking at it just a new start for us. We don't know any different, and I think we're going to kind of approach it that way. We've been inspired to see the collaboration from Amalga and some of the young chefs like Nell and Bo and Salt and Taqueria and Buka and just mm-hmm. all these great things and collaborations and all the upstart businesses and makers market like Dana was talking about. And, you know, a big part of the Jetty is to play off that. And we want the Jetty to be a hub for the area and to provide a home for Juneau's makers economy. To be honest, our experience with the city so far has been great.
That's great.
I think I don't see many roadblocks in completing that vision at the building and putting these companies together and having this unique mix of great tenants and great operators.
Yeah, I would say if anything, maybe there's just some, you know, everybody jokes around that Alaska's behind the times on certain things. And,
you
know,
think?
10 years behind on some things and maybe 10 years ahead on others. But, you know, I think certain building codes and just, you know, widths of roads and, you know, purely speaking from a real estate standpoint and development, you know, there's certain pieces in the code that I think, you know, would, if updated, would lend themselves to more multi-use development and kind of that live, work, play, mm-hmm. You know, developments that you see down south, like in Seattle, where, parking requirements in Juneau and the code are very tough versus, downtown you have abatements where you don't have to build a parking structure, whereas out in Ock Bay, if we wanted to build a very dense residential product, you know, we have to eat up acres of
for parking.
Right, right.
So on that note, really, you know, one of the things that we're going to be unveiling at the launch party for the jetty is our plans for a 30-unit condominium complex in the back.
Oh, wow. That's
so
exciting.
Yay. We're going to construct that directly behind the jetty. And the idea is that every unit will have an ocean view overlooking the harbor, covered parking, and large rooftop patios.
Yes.
And our goal is to deliver quality, forward-thinking housing to Juneau. And, you know, these haven't really been advertised yet. And so we're going to start taking reservations and interest lists at the jetty launch party. So we're going to be unveiling them. We have big architectural poster boards put up, and there's going to be some really cool units coming on the market soon. So
yeah, so the moral of the story is go to the jetty launch party if you want to have Devil's Club beer first, if you want to get reserved for these units first and whatnot. So there's a lot going on, so
okay.
Everyone should go.
Is there a place? Do you have an online presence yet where we can get more details?
Absolutely.
We do. The website for the jetty, and the jetty is JETTY,
okay,
by the way.
Gotcha.
The website is thejettyak.com, so www.thejettyak.com.
Yeah, and we have a Facebook page, too. It's called The Jetty. And then you can check out what we have going on this weekend, our launch party and the pop-up artisan market that's going to be on our events page on Facebook.
It's looking like it's going to be a pretty popular event, right? How many people do we got reserved?
We have like 257 people interested and or going.
Oh, sounds like a fantastic party.
Yeah.
Should be a good time.
Great. Okay, well, thank you guys for coming in. Best of luck with this project. Sounds like just what we need out there. Great, great,
thank
great.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Julie Copins, joined now in the studio by Nancy DeCherney, our indefatigable, did I say that
I don't
right?
know about that.
Leader of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, here to tell us all about what is up with the arts this weekend. Nancy, you are on.
Well, it is First Friday, and I dashed out without my First Friday list, so
okay,
y'all are just going to have to...
Something.
Oh, good.
There you go.
Perfect.
Look at that.
Look at that. You're already way ahead of me. It is First Friday, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on downtown. There is some stuff tonight, the climate change thing, from 7 to 8 out at the Egan Lecture Hall, so you can sprint out there. This is beautiful weather, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There's also at 6 p.m. a Wild Edibles Food for Survival, which is happening at the Discovery Southeast Center. So, and if you need details, you should go to the website, jahc.org or KTOO, and you can get them off the calendar. So we'll speed through here. Here we go. First Friday. Stop off at the Jack first and get your little card, your little map, so you know what to do.
What's in the gallery at the Jack this month?
I was just going to tell you.
Ooh.
It's going to be very exciting.
Okay.
Kristen Carrillo, who hasn't exhibited with us in 6 years. She's been away, and she's back.
I remember that name. Okay.
Yes, she has... very interesting show up for us. It's called Sociopath, and it is sort of a combination of sociopath and social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, how timely.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very exciting show. She's doing projections. She's doing all sorts of things. It's this. She says, this exhibit satires society and sociopaths using hard facts and personal experiences. So it's going to be quite an interesting show. Stop in to see that, and then go do your other things, and then come back, because we're having Motown for our town. It's going to be great.
Oh, how fun.
I know. It's going to be a wonderful...
What are the times? So when does the First Friday kind of gallery walk officially start?
4:30.
4:30. Mm-hmm. And then when do you have the Motown stuff
starts
happening?
Starts at 7:30.
Okay.
We're bringing in... as well as Bobby and Eustace, they brought a friend of theirs, Ryan Shaw, who has been nominated for Best Traditional R&B and all that sort of stuff. And we have Jonelle Soler down here as well. So, and Bobby Mitchell and Alyssa Fisher and Jocelyn Miles. So it's going to be a wild time. Everybody should come. Okay, but then over at the APK, they've got Ebb and Flow, a solo exhibit of really interesting... landscapes. The woman's name is Linda Enfant Lyons. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the middle name correctly. She'll be doing a little talk at 7 p.m., so you can go over and talk about that. She'll be doing youth workshops on Saturday about color mixing and landscape painting. One at from 10 to noon is for the younger kids, 6 to 9, and the afternoon one, 1 to 3, is for 9 to 12. So stop in there. I think if you head over to Copa, you might get ice cream. And there's a multimedia collage by Megan Chalfont. Up at the City Museum, it's the annual 12x12 community art thing where everybody paints
fun.
On 12x12
yep.
landscapes. And the theme for this year was seasons. Is this the 14th year, it says? I can't believe it. So that's stop up there. That'll be going on for a little while, up through the 20th of April. Alaska Robotics has a young woman who is, I think, 14 or 15. She's done a graphic novel.
Oh,
It's just amazing. Yes,
student?
Yes,
wow.
Yes. Claire Scott is her a name that she's going by. She's given us some books to give to the Poetry Out Loud kids that are coming.
Great.
So it's just a wonderful book. She'll be doing her book release at Alaska Robotics. So stop
that's
in there.
Her.
She started when she was 12, and it's a nearly 200-page book. So.
Wow.
So a lot of work went into it, and it's fabulous. Annie Kales has art by John and Sharon Svensson. Unfortunately, because of the ferry schedule, they're not able to be here.
Oh.
That's boo-hiss on that. But anyway, people are probably pretty familiar with the Svensson's work.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for a while. Shoefly has Horse Island Trader, a felted art extravaganza. She has all sorts of things that she does. She's doing a special sale. Downtown Dames has Tristan Berkey. At the Walter Soboloff Building, there is the Tlingit Art and Native Youth Olympics demonstration. Tlingit artist Tim Brown of Yakutat will be showcasing his hand-sewn seal, otter, and seal fur scarves and wallets. And Kyle Worrell will offer Native Youth Olympics demonstrations in the clown house.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, sounds like
gotta
fun.
Catch that for sure.
And, you know, it is free during the First Friday thing, so right. Stop in there. Barnaby Brewing has Willow and Luna, and they are doing a special beer, Dark Saison, I guess, a legislative saison. It's a beer that was brewed in honor of this year's season's session. So that one's going to be up through the month of March. Amalga Distillery has Moons and Tides by Crystal Worrell. And that's only going to be up this weekend. So if you want to see Crystal's work, you have to get out Friday and Saturday. And Claudia's Dolls, which hasn't been open for a while, is open this weekend with some carving demonstrations by Mary Ellen Frank. They're going to be open from 4 to 7. If you have not been there, you should visit
it's
this
doll. It's
very
unique.
It's very interesting. They're going to be first Friday and then Friday and Saturdays through the month of March.
And so it's in the building above Hearthside Books, right? That little triangle building. Okay.
Yep. You get into it. The door is just up the hill from as if you were going up to the Baranoff Hotel.
Right.
It's on the left-hand side, though. Rainforest Yoga has a free yoga class from 5:15 to 6:15. Stop in there, and they're having a kombucha tasting. So all kinds of things you could be doing there.
We love a kombucha.
Alaskan Brewing is doing a fundraiser for the Gastineau Humane Society for the month. And they're kicking it off on First Friday with something called Ales for Tales. There'll be samples of their latest brews, rescue dogs, and giveaways. I'm not sure which is which. You be careful. You'll go home with a puppy dog.
I've heard of having a little hair of the dog, but I don't want to take it too far.
And Harbor Tea and Spice in the Senate building is doing a matcha. Learn more about the health benefits of matcha tea and the different ways you can use it. So quite a few things there.
Wow.
And then, as I said, you come flying back to the Jack and get ready to dance. Also, out at the Rec Center, it's Shane and Emily in concert. That's open to the public as well. They're from Tampa, Florida, and they're traveling the country in an RV.
Okay. Wow, and they made it to Juneau.
Really? That's exciting.
That's out at UAS?
Yes.
Okay.
And at 10 p.m., Sugar Shack at the Alaskan Hotel.
They are always fun.
Saturday in the morning, there's color and the watercolor things that I talked about at the museum for kids. 10 a.m., there's also bat monitoring presentation out at the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center. So if you want to learn more about bats and how to find out what bats do. You're not looking
Keep
like
them
this.
Out of my head. That's all I care about.
You're not looking like you're excited about that one.
I love bats.
Okay, bats are... Okay, they're not bugs. Let's see. Felted Creatures over at Color Wheel Arts. That's a little workshop that's happening. The Garden Club's having a meeting from 3 to 5 at the Mendenhall Public Library. It is Women of Distinction.
That's right, Banquet.
The Aware Banquet is at 5:30. Ballroom Dance is happening at the Jack at 7 p.m., Swinging in the Snow. They're going to have Lindy Hop lessons, so stop in there. Gold Street Music is at Resurrection Lutheran Church, and this is the last concert of the season. So it's a suggested $5 donation out the door. Rumblefish and the High Cost of Living are at the Red Dog Saloon from 8 to 1. And there's First Friday Improv at the Goldtown Nickelodeon starting at 9. So you have a few things
be
doing.
We have to eat our Wheaties, Nancy, to get all that stuff.
Really. I feel like there's one other fundraiser that's happening Saturday night in addition to the Aware one. So you'll have to go to the calendar and look at that. On Sunday, we have Alex Botello is teaching a class on how to do platters and plates at the Canvas.
Okay.
We have gospel celebrations from one at 2 and one at 5:30. Always one of the most uplifting events of the season. It'll bring you right up. It's exactly what we need this time of year.
I saw a photo from some of this. They've been doing workshops all week, and there's been a lot of singers.
We have 100 people in the choir.
Amazing.
And people come back and do this because it makes them feel so good, and it is just the most wonderful event. So I can't tell you, if you can't make it on Sunday, there'll be a pay-as-you-can dress rehearsal on Saturday at 2 p.m. So do try to take this in, and it's just amazing is all I can say about it. There is a community forum on domestic violence on Tuesday at 5:30. On Wednesday, there's a design forum lecture coming and more felted things. On Friday, the 9th, is when we are going to have our community conversations about cultural appropriation. It's a potluck. So it'll be from 5:30 to 7 at the Jack, open to everyone. There's a Facebook event and such if you want to sign up for it or let us know. It'll be Colleen and Lyle Janes and Ati will be sort of organizing the conversation, so it's not just a free-for-all.
Right.
And the goal is that we all begin, a series of community conversations on this topic that I think we all need more information on. So.
Yeah, that was my sense just coming out of this, the controversy with wearable art, just feeling like I, as kind of a member of the majority culture, I'm ready to kind of sit back and listen and learn, and the fact that the Jack is making this opportunity available, I really commend you all for doing it.
I think I'm thinking that we are all going to come out stronger, better humans for the whole thing, because there's so many points of view on this subject and many things to consider, and we want to be considerate.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, people have been asking me when it is, and that's when it is.
Great.
What else do we need to
share?
Oh, scholarship applications are up as well. So go to our website. Those are for kids grades 7 through high school or through college.
Right.
So.
And the deadline for those applications, do you know offhand?
April 1st, and then the scholarship auditions will be the last Sunday, which I think is the 29th of April.
Okay. So. And then next Thursday is when Paula Poundstone is coming?
Yes,
did I get that right?
There's Paula Poundstone, and there's not many tickets left.
Okay.
So you best be getting those. We also have another thing, which is happening, that's both the radio station and the council are doing jewelry with Bronze Betty over at Louise.
Oh, I saw that. This is part of the art glasses series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So classes, like for grown-ups, because, you know, the kids get all the fun stuff, right?
Yeah,
they get
to do
all
that.
But every once in a while, we adults want to, like, make something pretty and have
play with stuff.
Have a beer and come home with a nice pair of bronze earrings in this case. Is that?
Yeah, that's the game plan. Betty
what
is going to teach you.
That's
the same night as Paula Poundstone.
Paula.
So if you don't get your tickets to Paula, then you could go do that.
I've got an alternative. Okay.
Yeah.
Nancy, that is a wonderful cornucopia of events. Thank you so much, as always.
Sure. Thank you for having
me. Give us the lowdown. Great to have you on the show. On tomorrow's show, Juno Afternoon will be back, same time, same place. Mark Kelly will share some of his images from Denali, Glacier Bay, and the Pribilof Islands as part of his presentation at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center Friday Fireside Lecture Series. That's tomorrow. We'll see the work of Linda Infante Lyons in display at the Alaska State Museum. We'll learn about the Indian Islands Institute, and we'll get a preview of the Gospel Singing Workshop. More on that going on at the Jack. That Bird Note Music and More tomorrow afternoon on KTOO at 3, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand online at ktoo.org. This has been a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, wishing you a lovely Juno evening. Thanks for listening.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley.